Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm John Donahue. Walter Mosley is the author of more than 43 books, most notably 13 Easy Rollins mysteries. Easy is one of a small handful of private eyes in contemporary crime fiction who can be called immortal. His latest, Rose Gold, continues Walter Mosley's ongoing and unique achievement in combining the mystery PI genre with a rich social history of post-war Los Angeles. It is a great treat to welcome Walter Mosley to this week's Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
The idea that this character was reborn in a way in the last novel is quite wonderful, and I'm hoping we can begin there. For you, was it a bit of a reset button on the character in the series?
Absolutely. What had happened in the book before, I had just, it's not that I had gotten tired of Easy, it's just that I seemed to be writing the same things. And so rather than continue to do that, I killed him, you know, that's like in quotes, because he didn't really die, and you didn't see a body, you didn't notice that he was dead, and the last voice you hear in the novel is his voice. And so maybe he's not dead. But I was just thinking that, you know, I needed to, you know, to get away from him. I thought maybe I wouldn't come back. But then at some point along the way, a couple of years, a few years later, I realized that my problem was that I had reached the kind of limit of the social development of my father and his generation. And I was now going to pass over into mine. And the minute I thought that, I said, okay, now I can do this. Then I can put, you know, Easy on the Sunset Strip, not because my father was there, but because I was there. And so I could continue the story, and I think do, you know, some kind of interesting work. I'm right now trying to think of the next Easy, and I think I know what I'm going to do. I'm very happy about it.
So bringing that character into your world and the world that you lived in, and that place. This book is set in the Patty Hearst era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you came to that time and ultimately what you wanted to explore.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things for me is the news. You sit and listen to the news, and most of the time you just hear it and kind of accept it because you're not arguing with it. But the other day, I was listening to a news station, and they said, it was July, I think, 1st or 2nd, and they said, the fuel prices are going to go up over the July 4th weekend because of the political trouble and violence in Iraq. Mm. And I'm sitting there listening to it, and I looked and I go, well, no. The fuel prices are going to go up on July 4th weekend because that's when people spend most of their money on gas, and that's why they're raising it, you know. And they didn't say, and there was nothing after that, nothing on the 5th, 6th, 7th, oh, the fuel prices are up because of this war. No. It went up for that. But somebody told this news person that, and I'm sure he just read it. I mean, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about it either. And he just read it and didn't, you know, at least give me a questioning look when he said it. I think that in things like, any kind of political moment, there are always victims who are unknown because they're not newsworthy. And so this novel was really, even though it's about, Rosemary Goldsmith, the person who may have been kidnapped and who may be in collusion with her kidnappers and who may actually have planned this whole thing politically to get back at her wealthy father. Yes, that's who Easy is looking for, but really it's this young black man who's kind of lost in his life, in his creative life, and has ended up messed up with this. And so Easy all by himself says, well, that's going to be the guy I'm going to represent. And so for me, that's the way that I experience the news and current events, and Easy is just, you know, living it out for me.
What was there about that time that was poignant for you that you could explore that was beneficial for you to say, okay, I'm going to take this character and bring it to the streets where I lived and in the time that I lived in?
I think that America, after World War II, late 40s through the 50s, was in a kind of a coma, kind of a social and political coma. And the 60s and 70s, they got out of the coma. They didn't wake up, but they got out of the coma. So like now they're just sleeping, having dreams, thinking that, well, maybe there's something we can do. I think a lot of very important things happened. A lot of the black and white political movements, radical and progressive political movements, the war in Vietnam, a lot of technological change in our society, a lot of change about race, the riots, and all of a sudden people saying, well, we really, you know, it's been 100 years since we ended slavery and, you know, somewhat less years than that since we ended blatant sexism. Maybe we should actually do something about that. So every moment that I'm looking at, every person that I'm looking at through the 60s and then in the 70s, I think pose really great questions for American society and in some ways the rest of the world, but definitely American society.
So this particular time is safe to say that it is very conflicted, mm-hmm. and we're trying to figure out where we are going to go.
Right, where we've been and where we're going. So a lot of people that Easy runs across are living like 10 years in the past.
Right.
Easy will come to a front door and a guy said, "Well, you can't come in here." And he said, "Well, I have an appointment. I have a reservation. The people want to see me. I'm supposed to meet somebody here, the president of the company." And they go, "Come on, man, the president of the company is not talking to you." So, no. President of the company, because the president of the company is, you know, a French man who was part of the resistance, who really kind of fell in love with the black American soldiers that had come, despite their own problems, to liberate his country. But you know, the white guy who's trying to stop him at the door is not thinking that, you know, and he keeps getting corrected. That guy keeps getting corrected again and again, and he's getting upset, and Easy's getting upset. You know, it's kind of there's a kind of an emotional slash political turmoil going on, like ripples throughout, especially the cities.
And for Easy, it's less about what the future needs to become and more about what he believes to be just fundamentally right.
Well, Easy is trying to live the life that's right with those pedestrians. You know, I love the word pedestrian. A lot of people don't like it, but I love the word, because there's all these normal people. There's a guy who he used to work with when, you know, he had a job as a custodian. You know, who's much older than he claims to be, who lives in a tiny little house surrounded by these gigantic apartment buildings that they put up all over Los Angeles. You know, he doesn't really have enough money to live, but he kind of makes it. He puts bars on his windows and doors, and he sits behind there with a shotgun and his wife, you know, who, you know, has heart disease. And Easy goes to see that guy. And that guy's life is the kind of life that you don't see usually in your fiction, in your movies, and you know, these are people who you have to look at very closely to see how important and how valuable they are to the culture in general.
We often sideline the pedestrian.
Yeah, and then you're only kind of looking at kind of, you know, fictitious people, you know, like, so if you see Isaac Hayes, you know, wearing a vest made of, chain mail steel, then you notice him, you know. But that's not who I loved Isaac, he was a great guy, but that's not who we are, you know. There are a lot of very kind of normal, everyday people who, you know, like to hang out in the woods and hunt rabbit, and you know, and who have a very definite beliefs about how society works and develops. And if you don't have those people modulating, you know, the larger parts of fiction, then you don't really have any kind of view of what that time was or who those people were.
So how do you feel in the course of this novel you gave them a voice?
Well, I think that Easy has found a guy who has an extraordinary talent, but he's just a normal, everyday, poor, black, you know, worker. But if he puts on any costume, he becomes that character. He becomes that person, that idea. You know, it's almost like an unconscious, you know, creative act. This has gotten him in trouble. But because he doesn't have anybody on his side, Easy says, well, I'm going to represent this guy. And through him, you meet all these other people, many of whom are very, you know, pedestrian, everyday people, just, you know, doing what they do, going to the bar, drinking some beer, hanging out, you know, white and black people. And for me, that was kind of wonderful, the idea that Easy would say, well, I'm going to represent this guy. And I know there's all these rich people, all these power people, and all these dangerous people, and the police, and all this other stuff, but I'm not worried about them. I'm just going to worry about this guy. And it happens again and again through the novel. There's a moment where he runs into a young black woman from Texas. You know, this is like if you were from Poland, you know, and in Kansas City, and you ran into somebody else from Poland, you go, wow, you know, and then you start talking to them. Well, he starts talking to this young woman. He says, well, you know, what do you need? And he helps her, you know, only because, you know, this is a landsman. This is somebody who's related to. And that's really, really, really important. I mean, in between people like the president of the, you know, the insurance company, Jackson Blue, who's just, you know, a natural genius, Mouse, who's another kind of genius. You know, rather than all of that, he's not dealing with those people. He's dealing with more normal people. And they accent this kind of very taut novel, making you see what the positive and the negative space is of you know, 1967.
Uhuru is an ex-boxer, and he has it in him to defend himself.
You're an ex-boxer, but, you know, somebody walks in with Ebola, you know. You know, you could beat up this guy, but if you do, you're going to get Ebola too, right? You know, so the thing is, yes, he can protect himself in some ways. He can think in some ways. He can do things in some ways. But the world that he's facing is way beyond him.
And he realizes that.
Well, he kind of realizes it. He doesn't really, he's kind of lost. He's that guy, you know, he's been shot. He's in a cabin in the woods outside of Santa Barbara. And he's having sex with some girl. Some girl says she wanted to have sex with him. He's not going to say no. You know, now, of course, he's bleeding. He probably shouldn't be having sex. But he's doing this. So he's, you know, but like a lot of young men, you know, he's a little lost. He's never been schooled correctly, has no father. He's never been shown which way to go. Nobody's ever had faith in him, you know, even when he was a boxer. And so that's Easy's job. Easy's going to come in, and he's going to do his best to give this kid what he needs.
And this is a character, Easy Rollins, that throughout his literary life has often given that guidance and comfort, even though he's troubled himself.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, he's from the country. You know, my father once told me when I was a kid, he said, you know, he says the notion of black orphans in the big city was such a shock to him, because when he was in the black countryside, there were no orphans. If a kid's parents died or a kid was alone walking down the street, somebody just took him in. My father was on his own at the age of 8, but he found a family to take him in. I mean, it's, oh, well, okay, you sit, what's your name? Leroy? Okay, Lee, you sit down at the end of the table, and, you know, when you can do something for us, you will. And that's the way it is. And those people were, he always called them his family, and they weren't really, you know, but I knew them, you know, that this is my cousin, Sonny. He said, well, he's Sonny, but he's not your cousin, but he is, because that family took him in.
And have we lost that?
I think that the city doesn't allow for it too much. I think that, you know, I was writing today about, you know, the interesting thing, you know, when you ask somebody, when I ask an audience, I say, well, who's the most important person in your life? You know, what's the most important thing in your life? People, you know, say their religion, they say their dog, they say their wife, their children. You know, they have all these notions of who's the most important thing. But the most important person in your life is the person who signs your paycheck. Because all those other people you could live without, okay? You could leave your wife, your children could hate you and move away, your dog can die. But if you lose that job, you're going to have to get another job immediately where somebody's going to sign that paycheck. That's really very intense alienation. And that's the big city. The big city is where you become the most alienated, where you have to concentrate on that person, that elusive person, more and more, who signs your paycheck. Everything else, well, you can do it or you cannot do it. That's not a good thing, but it is true.
Have you ever felt alienated as a writer?
It's interesting. That's a good question. I don't know, really. You know, you see, a lot of people who are writers that I know started writing when they were very young.
Right.
Some, you know, like they were like in the single digits. At 7 years old, I knew I was going to be a writer. I didn't start writing until I was 34, 35. And my whole notion about writing wasn't that I was going to be an author, or I was going to be in a library, there would be books. My thought is that if I could write a story from the beginning to the end, I'd be very happy. It wasn't until I was 38 that I got published. And the way I like to say it was is that, you know, I think this was my father's attitude about me. I was already a failure. And, you know, so, and once you're a failure, you see, you can be a success and become a failure. But you can really not be a failure and become a success. Once you're a failure, you're always a failure. You remember that. Oh, I failed. And so I'm not so interested about what people think about me as a writer. I might be interested in what they think of my writing. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Does it work? Does it not work? But as a writer itself, no, I don't feel alienated because I'm happy that I have the opportunity to sit and write every morning.
So there's the outward notion of what the world may think or what your father may think, and then there's what you think. So do you ever deem yourself a success?
No. No, and I don't, you know, and I, you know, another experience with my father is 1963. John F. Kennedy is shot. It sends terrible, sad ripples through the black community because, you know, we identified with that Kennedy. He seemed not as bad as all those other people who came about, maybe even good in some ways, you know. His commitment to at least working toward equality. Also, landing on the moon was a good notion. And so Kennedy is dead, and I'm a kid. I'm like 11. And the television, all of television, all they do day and night is cover the assassination. First time it ever happened. And so, you know, I'm a kid. I want to watch my cartoons. I want to escape. I don't want to, but it's always on, always on. One day, about 3 days in, I see this really tall man with his right hand up and Jackie Kennedy standing next to him. And I said, Dad, who's that man? He says, well, that's Lyndon Baines Johnson. That's the president of the United States. And I said, no, Dad, John F. Kennedy was the president. And he said, and the minute he died, and he snapped his fingers, you know, the minute he died, this man became president. And I realized, I said, that fast? Mm. He said, that fast. So who's important? If you could be president of the United States, like, you know, at 10:03, and at 10:04, somebody else is president, that's something.
So where does the drive come for you to be not only a prolific writer, but a really, really good writer?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, it's nice that you think I'm a good writer. I like to try to think so. Sometimes I do. I love writing. I've taken it on, and it's the most important thing to me is writing. I get up every day. I do it 7 days a week. I write, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day, every day, and I love it. And without writing, I feel a little lost. And so, you know, like right now I'm writing a novel that, yeah, I've been working on forever. You know, I think about it, and I think about it, and I come back, and I go away, and I come back, and I go away. But right now I'm actually going to finish it. I actually know what the ending is going to be. And it just makes me happy. Now, is somebody going to want to read this book? I'm not sure. You know, publishers are funny. They say, oh, you write mysteries. Keep writing mysteries. And I said, well, you know, that doesn't define me. And this novel's not a mystery. You know, people will be upset. People might not like it. People, you know, a woman came up to me last night and said, I read your Easy Rollins novel. I don't like your science fiction very much. I was trying to be nice. I didn't say, well, I don't care what you like. You know, it's like, you know, but I didn't say that. But, you know, you have that. You have, you know, people limiting you. You should write more of this. You shouldn't write this. You should do this. You know, I mean, they go on and on. Who cares, though? The important thing is that every book I write brings me further along, you know, inside my own art, inside of what I'm trying to do. It adds things. And politically, you know, I feel good. I mean, I'm one of the only people ever in America to write about black male heroes. One of the only people ever. I mean heroes. I don't mean like protagonists.
Right.
I mean, you know, Richard Wright had a lot of protagonists. You never call them heroes. I'm not criticizing Wright. I'm just saying that I write about like people that, you know, that later on people want to identify with or they want to date, you know, like Easy Rollins, Mouse, Socrates Fortlow, Fearless Jones, characters who are actually heroic inside of their own community, which is even more reason to keep that pedestrian side because you don't want them to kind of become impossible like Shaft or James Bond. You know, you want them to be somebody real that an everyday person who has an everyday job can read this and say, hey, I know that character, you know.
So if, not to be overly psychological, but it seems then that the reason that you were able to do that is because you were less concerned about those commercial forces, and it is the art and it is the physical act of writing where you get the need as opposed to worrying about what anybody else is going to think about it.
Well, you know, I've written 5 political monographs, and you better believe they don't sell very well.
Right.
I mean, people don't want to go out and read a 50-page manifesto saying that, why is there still a dialectic between, you know, capitalism and communism? I mean, come on now. You know, we should grow up. No, nobody wants to read that. But that's okay. I still write that book and publish it. And then, you know, I'll write Easy Rollins. And then I'll write, you know, some erotica. And then I'll write some science fiction. And, you know, it's okay. You know, yes, I'm not rising. I mean, there are certain writers that if you stick to one thing and you're very lucky, you can become very rich. If you really want to get rich, you should go into real estate. Writing books is never going to, I mean, there might be a few people in history who actually came up to the high level of wealth through writing books. But as a rule, no, you need to own, you know, the means and the mode of production in order to be rich. And writing books is not that. And I'm not interested in being rich, so I'm not going into real estate, you know. What I'm doing is I'm writing the books that interest me. And even if this book doesn't interest a whole lot of people, it teaches me something and gives me something that I can do with the next book, which they may be interested in.
With you being the only author writing a black hero, is that something that you are proud of, or do you think that it is ultimately just a sad commentary?
Well, black male heroes.
Black male heroes.
There's a lot of black female heroes. It's interesting. I think it's an interesting thing, you know, and I think, you know, even saying that, you know, there are people who will argue with me saying, well, no, I know somebody who does it and I do it, and, you know, and there probably are a couple, you know. I mean, but in truth, it's hard for black men in America to be cast in the mold of a hero because America has so fought against that. The good thing about black women, number one, they maintain the home, so we're always the hero in the eyes of their children. And two, the white female feminist movement took up the black movement at a very important moment in the history of writing, and in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that really helped. I, just because of where I come from, I'm like, my writing isn't a complaint. I'm not complaining. Easy never complains about what people do to him. You know, Mouse never complains. If you say to Mouse, you say, well, that man is after me. He said, well, we're going to kill that man. You know, and with no thinking, no feeling, no anger even. He say, he after me, I'm going to kill him. You know, and that's just it. And I don't have that. So I'm not trying to solve political problems. I'm trying to create a person who will not be dominated by that world that you know tries to dominate him. And you know, I mean, I've written that the last book I did, you know, Debbie Doesn't Do It Anymore, is my one and probably only black female heroine, a woman, first person narrative who decides to leave the porn business, and then we see how she survives. And she definitely is a hero. But that's the only time I've done that.
Do you allow yourself to think of you as a hero?
Nah. You know, one, it's not really worthwhile. Two, it's always imaginative. I don't think that Easy thinks of himself as a hero, you know, or Mouse, or, you know, or Socrates. You know, I think that all of them are incredibly aware of their own flaws, you know, and where they failed, where they've done wrong. And I think that that's actually one of the things that you need to be a real hero. if you start thinking of yourself as, you know, in any way or in every way better than this guy standing next to you, then you've already lost your right to represent that guy.
Walter Mosley's new novel is Rose Gold. It is published by Doubleday. Walter Mosley, what a great pleasure and thrill to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's great.
Thank you so much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. This show was recorded at Argo Studios in New York City. My thanks to Paul Ruest for his support. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.